It's Radio Free Nintendo, episode 87.
Ow.
I am your host, Jonathan Metz, and today's show is brought to you by the fine folks at Ruski Standard Vodka. At the Sami
Good.
Vodka.
It's gonna be fun.
Drunk Johnny Volume 2.
Ha! Drinking that shit straight, yo. The only way.
That's right.
We're anyway, not even a minute in and we're already titled.
Yeah, well, I'm not even sure I need to introduce you since your voices have all been registered so far. But I'll do it anyway. We have, in place of John Lindemann, who actually just made it through Hollywood Week. And this week, America, his survival depends on your votes. So be sure to tune in at 8 o'clock, 7 central. Anyway, he ain't here this week, so instead we've got our site director, Stephen Windyman Rodriguez!
It's not my name, it's who I am.
Whoa! We also have Greg, Captain Britain Leahy!
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody, I'm now officially a superhero.
Shouldn't that be Commodore Britain?
His alter ego is Brian Raddick, and his sister is really hot. She's like a ninja with purple hair.
Yes, it's true. Although she became randomly Asian at some point. I don't really know when that happened.
Yeah, I know. Well, it was like some kind of cloning issue or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, but, there's some crazy stuff that goes on there.
You know, seeing the hullabaloo over the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue this week made me think of when I was like 11.
I don't like where this is going.
Maybe. Yeah, when I was like 11, I actually bought the Marvel swimsuit issue. Yeah, I know.
Oh my god!
And I remember buying it, hoping that there would be some kind of story, and it would just happen to have all the beautiful Marvel superhero.
It would be sort of woven into a story.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. No, it's literally like a pictorial. They're all just chilling at the beach, and it includes a lot of characters who just really I don't see how anyone, male or female, of any sexual orientation would want to see in a swimsuit. Like Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler is definitely my favorite superhero ever, okay? But I don't need to see him in a swimsuit.
Well, you see, come the on. Thing is, though, is X-Men's all about overcoming prejudice and stuff, so they couldn't be selective about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, everybody had to get the swimsuit on, man.
I don't think the Blob was there, but and I don't think Professor X was there, but I mean, it was, yeah, anyway, okay, well, creepy topic over. We also have James Staff Jones with us today.
I feel horribly underappreciated now.
Yeah, you still.
What do you mean? That's like the coolest. It's the coolest. It's like being an agent.
An agent.
Yeah. We could just change your title to agent.
Agent Jones. Jones.
Yeah, it's
Agent Jones.
It's mysterious enough.
Well, he's also our beloved podcast editor.
Yeah,
does a damn fine job with that.
Yeah, James, I'll figure out something else for you to do besides just edit podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's not enough work, is it, James?
Oh, no, it's just Tuesday.
It only
Wednesday,
takes you like 24 hours to do it, so. Okay, Wendy, why don't you start us off with new business, but you're not allowed to talk about Brawl. Go. I'm just kidding.
No,
go ahead.
Got nothing.
Well, yeah, like you guys seen it on the site already. I put my big write up about my little party I had where I played Super Smash Bros. Brawl, 12 hours in a row. Had a couple dozen readers of the site and some of my friends come over, and yeah, that was awesome. Totally awesome. But I've done more than just play Brawl, believe it or not.
Whoa.
Finally, picked up Days of Ruin. And Professor Layton.
Wow, this is actually the first time these games have been talked about on our show, so I'm
really
excited.
Ruin got a minor mention, but yeah, certainly.
Yeah, I thought Lindy mentioned Ruin.
Yeah, so I haven't played Days of Ruin that much. I'm kind of saving that for when I go over to GDC, when I have some dead time. And I already have my impressions up on the site from when I played it a couple months ago. But I'll also talk about Professor Layton right now. And I've actually already beaten it. I'm just kind of plowed straight through. I just kind of got into the zone where, like, hey, I just have to go to the next puzzle. And I just couldn't put it down. It's so charming in that the story isn't really necessary for you to get the enjoyment out of the game, because all the enjoyment just comes out of the puzzles. And right. all the puzzles are completely independent of the story. It's all about, you know, I have 12 matchstick or something like that.
Yeah, so,
so yeah, and in reality, after I just kind of, you know, finished one of the last puzzles, and I kind of took a step back from the game, and I thought, you know what? The story is almost kind of pointless. But the fact that it's there, it kind of helps you drive you along, because you can kind of figure out everything that's going on. And then, so in that way, it's kind of its own little puzzle. You know, it's kind of like a cool little storybook. And it's got, like, full motion video cutscenes.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of voice in the game, too. So I like it a lot. It's really cool. And you can also download a new puzzle every week to try your hand at.
That's pretty hot. That's great. That's very un-Nintendo.
That's true. I mean, I've been downloading puzzles from, like, Picross for the last several months. I mean, that's been nicely supported over time. But, you know, Picross is very, very simple. It's just a sequel to numbers, essentially. So it's nice
I totally forgot about Picross. I need to look at that one, too. No, I've actually been playing my DS a lot more. Yeah, I guess, but still.
That's my problem. Like, it's like Sudoku. I'm not saying it's a bad game, but it doesn't need to be on DS.
It doesn't need to be Mario in it.
There's only like 10 Sudoku games on the DS last year. I don't understand what your problem is.
Yeah, and the best one was in Brain Age.
It really is.
To be fair, I think they do try and get the most out of it in terms of, as you say, obviously it's got inherent limitations. But when you've got a lot of puzzles in there, it'll take a lot of time. You've got those little daily challenges. You've got the downloadable content, which is nice. And the touch controls, once you get acclimated to them, you can actually handle them very quickly. At first, I was kind of like, I'm not sure whether they've done this right. But once you get used to it as sort of using buttons as modifiers for where you touch and things, it flows quite nicely. And I imagine it works much better than, say, like, you know, Picross on the Super Famicom would have done or whatever.
Why the hell would you need modifiers in Picross?
Well, it's like, say for instance, if you know when you put like a cross mark on there. So say for instance,
say
if you want to.
That's not okay.
Yeah, what you could do is, you know, you with certain squares, you solve the puzzle by eliminating a certain square, saying, right, that's not going to be filled in. So the point is, if you want to fill in a square, you hold up on the pad and touch it. If you want to eliminate the square, you hold down on the pad and cross it. So that works a lot quicker than having to go to a separate tool and then sort of crossing it off or filling it in. So that's how it modifies the touch, by holding a certain button.
I gotcha. And for anyone who hasn't played Picross, if Greg's description sounds to you like Minesweeper, there's a reason for that.
It's
and
very
ask
much
yourself,
to say.
As much as you like Minesweeper, would you pay $30 for it?
Well,
yes.
You could get it a lot cheaper than that, I think. I got it for about the equivalent of quite a lot under $20, and I was importing it. So you must be able to get it for better than that.
Okay, that's not so bad then. All right, well, back to Wendy. Finish what you were saying about Layton. I mean, what I want to know about Layton, what do you feel about the difficulty? Is it too easy or too hard? I heard it kind of runs all over the place, but is it?
It does run all over the place, and obviously some of these puzzles you've heard of before, because they're like 135 total. 100 of them you just come across during the course of the game. Some of those are hidden, and then another 20 on top of those are kind of more hidden. And then after on top of that, you had to fulfill certain conditions within the game to unlock the last 15. And some of the last puzzles are just incredibly difficult. They kind of stretch your logic limits to the limit, really. You really have to grasp the straws to understand what's that one thing that ties a puzzle together, some puzzles. And there are hints you can buy by finding little hint coins that are kind of hidden throughout all the scenes. And the hints they give you, like the first hint's a good kind of point you in the right direction. The second hint kind of boils it down to more what you need to look for. And usually by the third hint, they kind of give it away to you. But some puzzles are so difficult, they tell you when you buy the first hint, they tell you, this kind of puzzle, giving you a hint is really not going to help you. So don't bother buying the second or third hints.
They just tell you, don't bother. Yeah. What if you go ahead and buy another hint? Does it say, no, really, you idiot?
Yeah, pretty much.
Stop giving me money.
Yeah, but geez, and there are some that are, that look really easy, but once you know get it wrong two or three times, you're like, wait a second, why am I getting this wrong? So then when you kind of go back and think about it more, you realize, oh, and then you put it in, you know slap yourself on the forehead, and you're like, why am I so stupid that I didn't do that the first time? So yeah, I mean, and, you know, easy puzzles, hard puzzles, there are some diabolical ones in tier two, but overall, it's fantastic. It's really good.
Yeah, so that's like, one I want to pick up.
Is this sufficient space to make notes and things, or will you be reaching for pads of paper on some of the more difficult ones?
It depends. There are different types of inputs you have to do. Like, sometimes you have to circle the answer of the... it's like a multiple choice. You have to circle the answer you want to select, so you can't write on the touchscreen to do that. But other times, they do let you use the touchscreen to work stuff out.
Right.
So there were a couple of times where I just grabbed like a pad and paper and tried to work one out. Mm-hmm. Like there's this one which was impossible to do without doing that. It was a cube. They showed you a cube, like four cubes, and they had three shapes on each face, like on the side you could see. And three of them were the same cube, and the fourth one was a different cube. And you had to figure out which one was the odd one out just based on this, only like seeing half of each cube. So if you just look at it, it's so daunting to look at it because you think, well, first, I don't know what the cube looks like. And second, even if I did, I wouldn't be able to see what's on the other side of all the cubes. So that took me a really long time to figure out, my head at least. But then when I got the piece of paper out, I realized, oh, it's really that easy. And I solved it, and the nice thing about the game is that after you solve a puzzle, it basically lays out the why and the how for you.
Well, that's cool.
So even if you guess it, it'll tell you how it works.
Yeah, I've been playing it myself, and I've noticed, I haven't gotten as far as he has, but I've noticed that sometimes there was just blatant guessing, and after they explained it, I just felt, oh, well, that makes sense compared to, you know, the things I was trying, or... generally speaking, though, I've been using the pen and paper method pretty much the entire game. I've got a small stack of notes sitting on my desk right now of just things I was drawing up to try to do.
I'm a little worried because this game sounds like homework.
No. I've heard
it described as akin to psychometric testing in job interviews. If that sounds,
that's actually a lot closer, because in fact, one of the puzzles in the game literally was on one of the tests I took when I was applying for a job. It was a very bizarre experience. But I think the puzzles aren't, you know, I don't think they ever intended them to be really, really evil. Most of them, there's a certain thread of logic behind them that once you pick up on it, you're fine.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. Like, all of them have that thread of logic behind them. Otherwise, they'd be impossible to solve without, you know, putting some thought into them. It's just that you have to really know your stuff.
Yeah.
To get, you know, first to figure out how you need to solve it, and the second to solve it.
Yeah, I mean, there are some puzzle games where it just kind of feels like they just said, "Oh, well, they'll just try a bunch of things, and eventually they'll get it right." And in a certain amount of good amount of thought went into most of these puzzles. Of course, that could come from the fact that a lot of them were lifted from other places.
Yeah.
Books in Japan, wasn't it, or something?
Zakenwiki's a really bad offender of the trial and error puzzles.
Yeah, like, you can't really do that in Professor Layton, because there's a you get a score based on how many attempts you do the puzzle in. Pickrats or something they're called. And more difficult puzzles have a higher starting value. And if you get it wrong, you lose like a percentage, and you get to try it again. So even if you like get it wrong five or six times, you'll still get some Picarots, but not what you started with. So, like, James, how many Picarots are the puzzles like about? What's the highest Picarot value you've seen so far?
Well, I'm not very far in, so I've not seen them get very high.
They normally go up to 50, but then toward the end of the game, some of them are 60 and 80, and then some. The bonus ones go up as high as 99. When you see those, you're like, whoa.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there are some gnarly, gnarly difficult things in the game, seriously. But, you know, it's such a joy to figure them out.
How are the bonus ones, because I haven't gotten to them yet, how are they integrated into the story? Is it just like things you go back to later?
Yes and no. There are pieces of objects you collect.
Right.
Like, you might be getting parts of the gizmo right now.
Mm-hmm.
When you collect that, you unlock 3 bonus puzzles. You'll later come across pieces of a painting that you have to jigsaw together. And when you finish that, you get 3 more. Three other puzzles I haven't unlocked yet. You get pieces to fill your rooms in, like, the inn the professor and Luke is staying in.
Okay.
And you have to arrange the pieces, the furniture pieces in each of their rooms in a way to where they're both completely happy. And I'm just totally finding that impossible to do. I have absolutely no idea
how
to complete that.
Some fun sway. Okay, yeah.
So, anything else, Steven?
Other than I'm looking forward to getting to Advance Wars and more Brawl.
Okay, question about Brawl. Have you been able to get any good online matches going?
No, I have not. It's kind of
starting
to frustrate me
a
little bit.
I mean, don't you have some friend codes now?
I do have a couple. It's just that they're not online when I'm online, and I'm trying to organize it with them.
Yeah, why don't you call them?
it's the only way to
set up friend matches on Wii.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you, Nintendo.
Ty hasn't got his copy of Brawl in yet, and I'm kind of bothering about it every day.
It's sort of becoming a running joke now.
Yeah, it actually is. So when he gets his copy in, and we can both take video, we'll have some really interesting online little things that we've got planned. But for now, I'm just trying to find people to play it online with.
Yeah, wow, that sucks.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, Greg. Your turn.
Right. Well, first of all, before this wonderful discussion on Professor Layton, I pulled the trigger. I'm going to be getting it. Not least due to the efforts of a friend of the show, Chris Kohler, who's pretty much spent most of his waking hours extolling
pimping.
The virtues of the game.
Yeah.
And of course, our own Evan Burtsfield, who's been threatening to overthrow the site's leadership to get one of those foam hats. That came with review copies. So with that kind of enthusiasm around, even though I haven't ever been into like point and click adventures or puzzle games to any great extent, it seems really interesting and I'm looking forward to that. And what I've got back to restore after noticing we didn't mention Geometry Wars Galaxies last week, I have to mention it this week. But it's a peculiar story this one, because I was checking my Brilliant Region specific high score things for the aggregate table of everything, and there's two guys at the top that have been going at it called Rob and Rudy, and there's like several billions clear of everybody, right? But they were on exactly the same score to the single point. There must be something either wrong with the score table, or those guys are really competitive, because you were talking about 31 billion, you know, at the front, and then down to the very last digit, it was identical.
I wonder if they've literally maxed out the score.
I don't know, that to me was just a cry.
It doesn't seem like the kind of game that you could max out the score.
No, and
maybe there's screen. Yeah, the kill screen.
I couldn't believe. I have to assume that just the score tables were glitchy or something, because, you know, what are the odds of that when it's in the 31 billion? So, I mean, I don't
was
even
it a power of 2 minus 1 by any chance?
It's just crazy. But, you know, those guys are way, way out in front on everybody. So that's the top of the table sort of locked up pretty much. I've run into that situation where I need the handheld game to bloody well unlock the last 7 sort of the levels, which is kind of annoying.
Yeah, I'm still waiting, Wendy.
Yeah, I'm gonna send that out tomorrow.
I've heard that about 3 times now.
It's circled on my list. I have the packing materials here. It's ready to go. You'll get it this week, dude. I promise. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, you can add TYP to the list of people I've shown Geometry Wars and who don't want to play it after watching me play it. Actually, he actually tried to play it himself before I went and showed him how it's actually played properly. And he said he couldn't really separate the enemies from his shots and the level. You know, it was just visually too hard for him to identify what was going on.
Yeah,
and I can appreciate that. You know,
Yeah, there are times when it's really busy, when it almost feels like some sort of weird eye test. Because you need to know, like, which
colors. Like, if you
crossed
your eyes, it would pop out in 3D like a bubble.
You need to know, like, you know, the green enemies run away from him if you go towards them. So if you're in some great morass of enemies, you know, go in the direction of the green ones, because that won't kill you.
Don't run away if you go towards them, they run away if you shoot towards
them. Shoot at them. Well, I'm always holding the trigger down.
There's
so.
A big difference there, actually.
Yeah, but that's what, if you shoot them in that direction, you can afford to go as well, because they'll clear out faster than just you're killing them. And
yeah,
so you
I think
can, yeah.
Geometry Wars is basically a lesson in crisis management.
It is very much just like a million things happening at once. I mean, once
it may also be a method of blood pressure control.
Once it decides to just send everything at you, there's always a point in a lot of levels where it just decides to completely overwhelm you. And then it's a case of how long you can survive with the full multiplier and just rack that score right up in the middle of all that. And it's quite... I suppose you have to enter into some sort of zen state to sort of really get that, which I haven't quite done yet. I've just got mostly sort of silvers and a few golds and the odd bronze still outstanding.
So what is your favourite drone?
Was my favourite drone? It really does vary by level. I mean, most of them I've built up now to a reasonable level.
What's your default?
My default one's probably... I use sweep quite a lot, the shield one.
Yeah.
The one that circles around you. That's quite useful for levels where you've actually got walls... The
corners
they can't...
and obstacles. The ones
because
like
it can,
Pac-Man levels.
Yeah, it can take out enemies through the walls, which would be blocked off by your shots and things, so that's pretty good. Obviously, like when you've got those levels where you're getting perennially surrounded, defend's quite good because you can kind of shoot along 180 degrees.
I think defend is the only one I really haven't used at all.
Defend can be useful in those situations because if you're just constantly shooting in a big circle around you effectively because they're coming from you all sides, if you've got defend, it'll shoot behind you the whole time. So instead of just taking out one section, you're taking out sort of two, and then you could just sweep all around and rotate and you take them out quite twice as fast kind of thing. Whereas if you're on a level with strong enemies like those asteroids type ones, I like attack just to sort of vaporize it as quickly as possible. So
my favorite were kind of the higher level ones, like turret. Turret is a beast on a lot of, especially the open levels, because what you're talking about, when you just sweep your shots around, it does that by itself, and then you can kind of go over and pick things off manually.
Yeah, I need to build that up a bit more. It's still kind of trivial, and you really don't get to see what they can do.
Right, until it
gets higher. So
I think turret, on average, is probably the most powerful one.
Right.
Decoy, I've leveled it up like halfway, but I feel like I haven't really scratched the surface of what it can do. And the thing about decoy is that it actually messes up your logic of how the game works, because the enemies start behaving differently.
Yes.
And it throws off your strategy, and so unless you're really comfortable with decoy and you kind of can listen for the sound effect and you start to kind of, and basically you have to keep up with where it is.
Yes.
You know, where some of these other ones, they kind of go off and they do their thing and you just reap the benefits. With decoy, I think you actually have to keep up with it in order to plan for its effects. And the problem with that is it's tiny and it looks like an enemy and it wanders way off in the distance sometimes. So
absolutely. No, I've used that situationally, but not to any great extent.
Yeah. I think it's the hardest one to use. It may be really powerful, but I haven't really gotten the hang of it yet. We are into the nitty-gritty now, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is like the seventh time it's been brought up, but you know, you've got to keep coming back to it. It's the touchstone.
Clearly, we are obsessed.
You know, it's funny how much that game's come up, and we've never actually mentioned the one thing about that game that will always stand out to me. It's really, really abysmal advertisement campaign that started just before the game came out.
Oh, the lolcats?
Not just the lolcats.
Oh, yeah!
Then they did the music video with Particle Man. It was just this really bizarre series of ads that didn't make any sense.
They had
Particle
some very
an old They Might Be Giant song. I mean, old, like 10 or 15 years old.
Old and awesome.
Yeah, it was like Particle Man with what looks like some sort of high college student shooting a YouTube video in their dorm room.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'll include a link to it on the AAC feed. It's just mind-numbing.
No, I gotta be honest, I wasn't aware of any marketing for the game. Obviously, I don't really need any, but, yeah.
It wasn't very
good. I think it's a game better served by word of mouth. And that's why I kind of feel like I want to keep talking about it, because I love it so much, and I want people to give it a chance. But, again, every person that I've shown it to has basically run away from it.
That's kind of surprising to me.
Every now and then we get these emails from people saying, tomorrow I'm going to pick up Geometry Wars based on your recommendation, and I'm kind of afraid, because I think there is a high likelihood that they won't like it. It's just that kind of game.
They might just soil themselves.
I'm generally in the same camp as those emailers.
Your eyes start bleeding or something, I am not going to be held liable.
We're not
going to
pay for the dry cleaning, okay? Under no circumstances.
Here. I have a recommendation based on that. I mean, if you don't think you're going to like the game, maybe because it's too visually, huge or busy or crazy or whatever, try getting the DS game instead. Because honestly,
it is slower,
frame rate.
That's from our point of view.
So much hate.
Well, no, you'll get the same experience out of it. You'll get stuck in the zone like you would in the Wii game. The experience might not be totally the same, but if you want the crazy edge of your seat escaping gameplay or whatever, the DS version, it'll work just fine. Plus, the portability, it might be a plus for a lot of people.
Some people might not be inclined to play a high score game in that, whatever time they have to play console games, they may not be inclined to play a high score game in that capacity, but a handheld game, maybe more so.
Yeah.
So it depends on how you order your gaming and your priorities, I suppose.
Yeah.
I guess so. This issue of, games being credited with higher value or something, or basically the idea of portability being an innate feature of any handheld game, it doesn't fly with me at all, because I play most of my DS games on my couch while I watch TV or on the toilet. I don't carry it with me anywhere, because if I leave the house, I'm either walking, which is not a good idea to play DS while you're walking, or I'm driving, and not a good idea to play DS while you're driving. So I'm very rarely in a situation, maybe when I fly, but that's three or four times a year. And
yeah,
so the
portability, think of the little kids with the games that the parents are driving them everywhere and all that stuff. So,
of course,
a lot of people have a DS, so it doesn't matter that the majority play that at home. Even if the minority does, it's still a lot of people. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. So, if there are any little kids listening to the show,
buy Miami Knights.
Do as I do, not as I say.
God.
Greg, have you played anything else?
A bit of the old, what was that game called again? Let me just make sure
Lords
I get the name
of
right.
Thunder.
That's the one. Thank you very much.
Lords of Thunder.
That's just scary. Oh, God. Yeah, I've been playing that.
It's not nearly as creepy or as badass as that makes it sound.
No, it's not.
No, not quite, no. It's not actually some sort of villain. It's, in fact, a shoot-em-up for the TGCD. But that's been good.
As is everything for the TGCD.
And I was playing a bit of Pikmin 2 co-op, which I didn't really do when I was playing the one-player game.
Wow.
Which was kind of interesting. We might come back to this topic a bit later on, but all I will say about it is it was fun, I enjoyed it, but split screen for Pikmin is not ideal.
Game split screen when you're two-player?
It
merge when you're near each other?
Yeah, co-op challenge mode, and it was split screen, so not the best game to have split screen.
Seem to remember the competitive two-player mode being a lot of fun when I played at E3, but Pikmin is the kind of game that it's so weird that it's kind of hard to get people to play it with you.
Sure. Well, that's some of the reason why I hadn't sort of played it at the time when I was just playing through the one-player game. It just never really happened, but just sort of in the search for something other than Melee to play. Still, just went with that, and it is fun, and I think the potential for perhaps a non-split screen, i.e. whisper it online multiplayer mode in the future Pikmin would actually be a rather wonderful thing if it were well executed and God forbid had some sort of communication attached to it.
This shouldn't be funny, but it is.
No, tragicomic, I think I would describe it.
Did Pikmin 2 support God forbid you actually have all the pieces for it. Land play?
No, it did not.
Oh.
No, not that I can.
And I had all the pieces for it, so yeah. I would know.
Yeah. Land play was the most dead-in-the-water feature I've ever seen for GameCube. I think, were there like two games
online was
it?
The most
Maybe
dead.
Three?
The two games supported online.
Online was never supported in the first place. Nintendo's like, haha, here, we'll give you the hardware. Go knock yourself out.
Yeah,
that wasn't
out,
even
yeah.
a feature of the GameCube, okay? But land play, I think there's Mario Kart.
Mario Kart, Kirby, 1080. Yeah.
1080? Did 1080 really have a land play?
Yeah.
Who
did
would
Kirby
want to
really
play
have
that
land play?
On land play?
Is that Kirby's Air Ride?
I gotta tell you, I played 1080
Press
Avalanche
a
for
lose.
About an hour, and I was done with it.
Why does a simple game like Kirby have land play? Couldn't they have invested that time in coming up with an actual control scheme? As opposed to a one-button control.
Wow, trolling on the podcast. Do you remember when F-Zero was supposed to have land play, and then they kind of took it out at the very last minute?
And
that
would have been incredible.
Nobody really knows why. I'm sure it had some bugginess or some issue that they decided not to do it. But land play, dude. I mean, I think it says a lot that they haven't even mentioned it for the Wii, even though the Wii is easily capable of doing it.
It's
probably
more
wirelessly.
Viable, if anything.
I would say it's
say
almost
what?
Certainly wirelessly capable, because I mean, it communicates with the internet wirelessly. I would imagine that it would be completely insane for them to say, oh, but you need a piece of hardware to do LAN play.
It's essentially the same as a Wii communicating with a DS.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of befuddling, but yeah, there you go. A lot of their
maybe they just figure that Maybe they just figure the Wiis are so hard to come by, no one has two yet.
Well, that's what they've done with Guitar Hero 3.
They're so portable, you could carry them around your friends.
Mm. They don't have a handle.
No one can actually play two-player in Guitar Hero, so who cares about stereo, right? James, what have you been playing other than Layton?
I've been playing Layton, and because of this podcast, I downloaded Lord Thunder.
Oh yeah, the disease breath.
Which is not nearly as sadistic as I was expecting it to be for a TG-16 shooter.
It's actually kind of easy.
Yeah, I was expecting
it's
medium.
It's not intimidating, is it? That's the thing.
Right.
I mean, you can kick up the difficulty if you so wish, but it's not like that all out assault of some shooters that pride themselves on that.
Some shooters where you get going and you just realize the designers had no concept of what is fairness. And they would just do things seemingly designed to make you want to break your controller.
The first thing is you don't have the one-hit kill. You have a life bar. So it's,
right,
it's
straight
away,
helps.
It's not quite as merciless as some.
But there's not, like, enemies firing off from off-screen where you couldn't even see them getting ready to shoot at you or anything.
Mm.
They do have the enemies coming up from behind you,
That's
which is
true.
Something you have to be aware of.
It is sort of more accessible kind of design. And rather than sort of the ramp up to crazy difficulty, like all the levels are kind of the same, apart from presumably the last level, which I haven't actually seen yet.
Which is actually what I was going to say. I'm not convinced that anyone could ever feasibly get to the last level of this game. Because you get, what, two lives, and you have to spend all your money on lives if you actually want to get more of them. And it's just like, I don't think it's actually possible, short of a cheating device, to beat that game. I mean, it's not like it's
I've managed
too
to
hard.
Do about, I've managed to do about four levels within the continue so far, so I'm not that far away, and yet I could easily be very far away, in a sense. I mean, you need to make sure you pick up as much of those gems as possible, you know, shoot absolutely everything so you get the maximum currency.
I got to four, and I was just didn't have enough money to upgrade, because you can buy health and armor and weapons upgrades that the game so lovely takes away from you after you get hit. Or I could have bought an extra continue, and it was like, well, I'm not going to survive if I don't upgrade my firepower, but I'm going to run out of lives if I do it. So it's basically
you just have
the game
to kind of, in one way, it is a bit like an old school shooter that has a linear progression and has a lot of power ups in that you need to get on a roll. If
right.
you can power yourself up and get in a position where you know you buy yourself a lot of power ups for your health and your weapons, and you don't lose it, and you just accumulate more and more and more, and you never get in a position where you struggle. I could imagine you could just get that carry that through to the end, possibly.
You know, even Star Fox 64 is like that. TYP and I were talking about it last week, like with the Venom, the difficult version of Venom, and fighting the Star Wolf team.
Yeah.
If you don't go in there already powered up, or if you do go there in there powered up and you don't do it correctly and you die, it'll restart you at that level, but you won't have any of your
upgrades.
You won't
have to double the double.
Really difficult,
light.
Right?
Yeah,
but it's so much more difficult in this game to do that because, like, I fully upgraded the, I think it was the wind armor weapon, which gives you this omnidirectional firing ring of death that comes out in like four plates that shoot out in all directions. And for
that's the water.
Yeah, and for about 2/3 of the level, nothing got anywhere near me because it was just instantly wiped out. And then, like, a rock fell from the ceiling and killed, took away my weapons, and then all hell just broke loose because now things were getting to me, and I had completely been knocked out of the zone by a damn boulder. And I just got destroyed within 3 minutes of being the unbeatable world killer. And similarly, where I went into the boss of that level with no upgrades and was able to get through without getting hit. And it was just sort of this weird, if you're feeling it in this game, you'll be fine, but if, God forbid, even the smallest thing throw you off because you're done.
Unraveled.
It's like, almost like a rhythm game in that respect.
In a way,
it's
yeah.
Hard to get back into the groove.
But
yeah.
I'm not
sure. Well, since you guys have already stolen my thunder on Lords of Thunder, you've stolen my Lords of Thunder. I guess it's probably obvious, but I just downloaded it today too, so that'll segue into my new business.
Well, I had one question about that game though. Has anybody actually determined whether or not the elemental, because all the armors you can pick before the level are elemental, do they actually affect anything besides giving you a different shot pattern?
We mean like a Pokemon
style
system.
I think it's more of which one suits your style.
Yeah. Okay. Because I mean,
and it seems like maybe the movement characteristics of your little guy change also. Maybe like it seemed like the wind made me a little faster, but that I don't know. Maybe that's placebo.
I don't know. I mean, I was trying to, like, use the water one when I went into that fire level and realized, oh, they don't really seem to care if I'm shooting fire or water at them, despite being made out of fire.
Right. Okay, well, anyway, I just downloaded Lords of Thunder, and I kind of agree with what you guys have said. I like it, actually. It is a little easier than your average shoot 'em up, and I think the shop mechanic and gathering the crystals and deciding what to spend your money on adds kind of a nice strategic element to it. Like you said, like you kind of have to balance between buying upgrades and buying continues. And a couple other notes on that. I think once you get good enough at the game, it's probably a better idea to not waste your money on upgrades because that's stuff that you can gather in the level if you're pretty good. And also there is an item called the Elixir that I haven't actually bought one yet, but from the description, it sounds like maybe it automatically brings you back to life if you die.
I could never afford
it. That may be a better target for your money than continues, because that way you won't have to start the level over again.
Yeah, that's very valuable.
Oh, have you actually gotten one?
No, I have not, but
it costs more than the continues, so I'm going to guess that it's more useful than the continues.
You have to think that, because there's only one checkpoint on each level, which is the boss.
Yeah,
so that's big chunk of space where if you die 3/4 the way into that part before the boss, that's annoying. So if you could bring yourself back from that, that would be very useful.
And of course, dying going into the boss isn't much fun either, because you're now facing this boss with the weakest weapons in the game.
And half health.
But as you said, if you can figure out the pattern, that's okay.
Well, in theory, yeah.
You might be able to win without
the,
even
the ones
hit.
I faced don't really. I think I faced probably all of the six at some point at this stage. They're not too bad, you know. They're not complete. They won't just annihilate you if you can't do the same to them in a very short space of time. There is
I think
a certain.
They're fair bosses.
You can evade attacks and whatnot.
Yeah, they don't tend
okay.
to. You go on.
Well, I was going to say the my last comment about Lords of Thunder, and based on my limited playtime, is that I remember. You guys last week were praising the music, and I really don't like the music that much.
Oh, come on, it's kitsch.
It really is.
I think I would compare it to Excite Truck. honestly.
See, I've played the shit out of Excitron and I've never heard the music because I just stuck my MP3.
Maybe because you read my review before you bought it.
That's very likely, actually.
Yeah.
I just like
the music is ass. Instead of listening to that, it's really bad.
Instead of listening,
this kind of reminds me of it.
There was a British publication that referred to it as music piped from the devil's arsehole. With that kind of sentiment, I was just like, I was banging along to the Mexica tracks, like Knights of Cydonia and stuff. I wasn't going for any of that.
Yeah, thank God that game has custom soundtracks. And by the way, why don't more Wii games have that? Yeah.
I think the only reason that game has it...
No more heroes could use it.
The only reason that game has it is because Monster Games made it, right?
Yeah.
They recognized the soundtrack was just not good. And they're like, you know what? I'm not even going to bother with the soundtrack. Just SD card support and we'll call it a day.
Yeah. So that's good. Anyway... I did beat No More Heroes. The review's on the site, and I don't really feel like talking about it anymore. It's a fine game. It has a lot of problems, but the ending is completely ridiculous, but I wasn't really surprised by the fact that it's ridiculous.
No.
That's sort of in keeping with the tone, you know. The ending is I assume it's some kind of parody, but I'm not sure of what. It's not necessarily all that funny, but it is completely absurd. It's like, oh my god, this person is your brother, except you've never actually met him before. So it's not really a shock. You know, this person just shows up, he's like, I'm your brother. Oh. And Travis is like, no, what? And then you kill him.
My god.
Okay. So I'm not sure that's supposed to be emotional. I mean, anyway, made some progress in Scourge. I think I'm extremely close to the end of it now. It is quite a long game. It's a good 10 or 12 hour game. It's longer than Zero Mission, for instance. A game that it's clearly inspired by, or at least the Metroid series it's inspired by. I think the main thing, and I'm not sure that I've talked about this before, and I'd like to hear Lindemann's thoughts on it. Maybe he can chime in on this next week if he comes back. But my complaint about Scourge is that the pace of the game is severely hampered by the fact that you're constantly having to bring up a little menu and change the type of weapon, because there are all these alignments on your weapons, and they'll mix up enemies, so there's like, it's all this rock, paper, scissors kind of deal, where there's like an enemy and you have to shoot it with fire, and there's another enemy right next to it, and if you shoot that with fire, it makes it stronger, so you have to switch to your other weapon to kill it, and this game really throws tons and tons of enemies at you in waves, and they're always mixed up types, and it just becomes really annoying, because it seems like every 3 seconds you have to change weapons. It's kind of like in the first Metroid Prime, there were some areas near the end of the game that were kind of like that, where you're just constantly switching weapons. It's like, dear God, why can't you give me one weapon that's just effective? Like, I get that there's supposed to be some strategy here, but you're totally ruining the pace of the combat.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't like those specific beam enemies, that thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
it's okay
they fixed that
bosses,
to some extent
but...
in Echoes, because you could use the Annihilator, even though it's expensive,
yeah.
And there were only two types instead of three or four. And then in Corruption, they completely fixed it because all the beams stacked.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Retro figured that out. I'm sure if there was a Scourge 2, which there won't be, they would probably improve on this. I think it's the main failing of the game. It's still a really good game. If you can find it on bargain like I did, then, and you like Metroid games, you should definitely pick it up. I guess the only other thing I've played is Guitar Hero 3, and there's a little story that goes behind this, in that on Valentine's Day, I had this girl over at my place, I made her dinner, and we're eating dinner and talking, listening to music, and then the lights went dim, and the music volume 12. Went down a little bit, it got softer, and she said, oh my god, is that Guitar Hero? And I said, yes, it is. And so we play Guitar Hero for an hour.
Yes, it is.
Oh, God.
No, in all fairness, this was early in the evening, and we had other plans, and so we were basically killing an hour in between dinner and this concert that we were going to. And we were just talking, and you know, she looked at that, and I was like, sweet. You know, I mean, it was her idea. I was not going to mention games at all, although coming into my apartment, it's kind of hard to avoid them. But Yeah, she's actually pretty good at it, so that was cool. I played Guitar Hero with a girl. That's how I wrote it on my notes here. With a girl.
Just so you wouldn't forget amongst all the other time.
She was impressed at my prowess.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
well, there you go.
So, that's the end of new business, and we'll be back in a minute after a quick break. And we're back for segment two. We're going to start with VC Mondays and roll through this pretty quick. We actually have a really good week. For the second week in a row, we've had a good week. This one's even better than last time, though. We've got Ninja Gaiden 3 for the NES. I think the subtitle is The Ship of Doom. And Phantasy Star 2 from the Genesis. I think I'm the only one here who's played Ninja Gaiden 3 recently. I downloaded it today. And actually, I really like the first two Ninja Gaidens, and I recommended them both on the site. And Ninja Gaiden 3 was the only one that I never played way back when. So I was kind of excited to try this one out. And from the first couple of levels, I'd say that it's really not much different from the first two. There's a cool little sword upgrade you could get that extends the length of your sword slash, and that's nice. And it seems like they've taken away the Phantom guys, which is kind of weird. Because that was a major feature in 2. So, the cutscenes are pretty damn impressive. I mean, it's still... Even though that originated in the first Ninja Gaiden, it's still impressive to see it in the third one, because there really weren't any other NES games that told stories as well as Ninja Gaiden series did. So, if you like the first two games, I'd say go for it. It is definitely still brutally difficult. On this one, you actually have limited continues. So it might actually be worse than the first two in terms of difficulty. Phantasy Star 2, though, James, I know you've played this in the same context that I have.
A million years ago, yes. This is regarded as, I'm going to say, among the best RPGs on the Genesis. Of course, the Genesis really struggled with RPGs.
I think it's widely considered the best RPG on Genesis. I mean, there wasn't much else.
I personally disagree with that designation.
Well. Really?
Yes.
Not a fan, then?
It's not a fan. I just think that I would classify Shining Force as an RPG, and most people wouldn't, and I would say it's a superior game.
Okay.
I don't remember a whole lot about the game. In fact, I can't remember. Is this one still in first person?
The dungeons are not. The dungeons are more like Dragon Quest dungeons.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't sure if that was the one that made the change or not. It's a lot like a RPG from that era. You know, it borrowed heavily from some of the other ones in that series, and it has a pretty decent story, if I recall. I'd say, you know, it's worth a shot if you're a fan of that genre and never played that series, or if you, you know, just reminiscing about your previous Genesis high days.
Yeah, if you like NES RPGs or Super NES RPGs, you should check this game out, because it's very similar to Dragon Quest, Dragon Quest 2, 3, Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy 4. I'd say it's a little less sophisticated than Final Fantasy 4. And definitely much less than 6, but it's a very good game, and it doesn't stray that far. I mean, a lot of people talk about the setting of Phantasy Star, and they're so into it because this was like the sci-fi RPG series, whereas all the other ones were about swords and dragons and stuff.
Right.
And that's true, but I don't necessarily think that's a better setting for an RPG.
It's just different.
It's just different, you know? So I don't find that to be a major appealing factor, but it is well constructed, the graphics are very good for Genesis, actually. So there's a lot going for it. If you like RPGs, you know, old RPGs, this is like, duh. I mean, it's $8. This is absolutely worth $8 if you're into that kind of game. If your first RPG was Final Fantasy VII, you might want to be a little careful with this one, because it is an old school RPG in the sense that it's very difficult. When you first start the game, you probably will die right off the bat.
Yeah.
Like your first battle. I mean, you have to level up meticulously. You have to save up all your money. And it's the kind of game, it's like the early Dragon Quest games. You have to sell your old equipment just so you can buy the new equipment, because the money is so short. I mean, it's, you really have to play extremely conservatively, which is a very Japanese style of thing to do back in that era of RPGs.
Right, the money,
it's not modern whatsoever.
Money does not flow like a river in some later RPGs.
Right, yeah. I don't think you're going to beat this game with a lot of extra money. So yeah, it is nasty. You'll probably have to go on the internet to find maps of the dungeons because they're so complicated. But it has a lot of redeeming qualities, so if you like that kind of game, I think this is probably maybe the best RPG on the Virtual Console so far. I like Breath of Fire 2 a lot, but I think Phantasy Star 2 is just as good or better. So anyway, wow, we actually have a forums update, don't we?
Oh, yes. In fact, we have.
They're back!
They're back! No, yeah. They're not back. They're new. We have a new set of forums.
Okay, yeah. The new forums are back.
Yes. Okay.
I blew your mind with that one.
We have a new forums system up. It's in many ways superior to the old one. There's still some minor adjustments that are being made. But really, we have to thank our code overlord, Aaron, for getting this all set up for us so quickly. Because that was, I mean, I was thinking a week, 2 weeks at the earliest, and he had it up in, what, 2 days?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's pretty, it was shockingly fast, I thought.
Well, actually, we already had the groundwork of what we wanted the new forums to be. He kind of already had everything set up. It was just, we had to accelerate it because the old forums kind of self-exploded.
Yes, and about
so everything
that
was there. He just had to, you know, activate everything and do his evil dark magic incantations or whatever he does to get everything working.
Well, I mean, what really was wrong with the old forums? Why did we have to pull it down?
Okay, now we were aware of this last week, but obviously we couldn't talk about it at the time because it was still somewhat sensitive. But apparently there was, due to the, as it is so eloquently described by our community manager, our awful forum script's giant gaping security holes were exposed, in that any individual who was logged in, if they knew the URL for the banning scripts, could execute a ban on any other user regardless of whether or not they are a moderator. Which is a pretty horrific thought, actually. And on top of that, that meant it's possible you could access personal information tied to accounts. So there was some concern, and obviously we had to act on that. However, it seems that this whole incident where someone waltzed right into our security holes and started executing them was an internal form of sabotage.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Sacre bleu!
Thanks to our aforementioned community manager, he apparently had led another user on a campaign to play with the ban screens. And there's a very interesting, under the announcement titled "Explanation of Recent Inexplicable Bans," there's a very interesting chat log between Ty, who goes by the alias of Super, and ShiftKey, who's under in the chat as Shifty, as they begin to screw around with things on the boards.
Yeah. And basically, the gist of it is this, isn't it? Is that basically Ty Sugar, our community manager, is in fact a Sith Lord and engineered this crisis so that he would, you know, emerge from it as the Lord of far better forums than he already was. So, yeah.
And he would have got away with it too if it weren't for these meddlesome kids and their mangy dog.
If it weren't for ShiftKey completely ratting his ass out.
Yeah, just posed in the log the entire thing. Oh, dear.
You know, after hearing that, I kind of wonder why I bothered even keeping Ty on staff.
Hey, man. If it works, man.
But I guess it worked, so.
There's a great line from the chat log that reads, "Super, do it and maybe we can get the news forums up in a week ago so this quote doesn't happen again." To which Aaron quoted and replied, "Son of a bitch."
Yeah.
Oh, look at that foresight. Manipulation.
And the response to Aaron's indignation was, "Active sabotage is the only way to get things done around here. Fact."
Well, you know, that's the hacker rule of code of ethics, basically, is, you know, the whole so-called friendly hacker thing is like, bust through someone's security and then tell them how you did it and show them how to fix it. Although I think that's giving Ty way too much credit.
Well, he's defending himself as saying, oh, well, I knew it was there and I was saying it.
Okay.
Oh, jeez.
Well, now that the forums are back up, regardless of who caused us to take them down in the first place.
Blame the Australians.
Are there some good threads? I mean,
yeah,
there's got to be some good stuff going on.
Let's stick with Ty and his wonderful form of community management. He has offered unto us in the funhouse his
unto us his in biblical terms. Wow,
his official guide on how to troll video game related message boards. Essentially, it comes down to 4 points. If it's about Nintendo, post how said product is for babies. If it's a thread about Microsoft, be sure to comment on the red ring / failure rate. If it's about Sony, it's already pre-trolled. No need to post.
Okay.
And if it's about PC gaming, be sure to mention how it's dead and being abandoned in droves. And, essentially everyone had tried to troll the thread and simply managed to do so in spectacular fashion. It just completely failed in trying to counter-troll the master troll that we have somehow promoted to community manager.
Yeah, exactly. He's like the drinky crow of our forums, you know? It's like, technically his job is to ban trolls, and yet he himself is the biggest troll of all.
He only bans the ones that aren't doing it right.
Yeah.
He doesn't even ban them.
He just makes fun of them.
Oh, jeez. Let's see. Moving into a slightly more constructive discussion. Somebody found and posted on our console discussion pictures of a new Nerf product related to the Wii, the Nerf Wii Light Gun.
Badass.
Which, since you all can't see because this is voice, is an abomination that God must punish the creators for.
What?
I don't know about that.
Why would you buy a Nerf gun simply so you could stick the Wii remote in it?
Well, wait, my understanding is this is a Nerf dart gun that changes between darts and the Wii remote.
Yes.
So you can use the same holster to shoot darts or to shoot or to accept beams of light from your Wii, right?
Actually, accept beams of light coming into your Wii.
No, from your Wii. Sensor bar, it projects, and the remote is a receiver.
Well, that is what it is, but as in terms of products, it doesn't make a damn bit of sense why it was ever even created.
Yes, it does. Look, think about it. You're a mom. You want to buy something for your kids. They've got a Wii. Ooh, y'all get them a Nerf gun. Okay, so you look around. Oh, this Nerf gun can put a Wii remote in it. It's like two toys in one. Purchased. There you go. End of story.
I think it's totally bizarre, but kind of awesome.
I just think it's amusing that they thought of it. I think that's the biggest amusing thing for me.
It's just weird.
What kind of board meeting led to this creation
exactly.
of this product? This is
what happened.
Are they doing shrooms?
The Nerf people probably thought, gee, you know what? We need to get on this Wii thing. I know. Let's just make a gun that can have a Wii remote inside.
I'm looking forward to the Wii Super Soaker.
You know, it's just like, where did this come from? And the entire community started off people going, this is just the worst idea I've ever seen. And then at some point, everyone decided it was cool with no explanation given.
No, it's the old sort of, if it gets so bad, it's cool. You know, it's like Chuck Norris.
Yeah, exactly. I think the form factor of it is better than the Zapper.
Well, that's not saying much, really.
I know, but and there's already a gun that's kind of the similar format, which is, I think, called the Perfect Shot. And I've heard it's very good. If you want a gun holster for the Wii that actually feels like a pistol and you know, is comfortable and accurate, unlike the Zapper, I think it's like the Nyko Perfect Shot. It might be another company. But this looks Nyko, like kind of the same thing, but it has the extra feature of shooting Nerf darts.
Yes, but I'm sure you'll be paying for both features. Exorbitantly, because it's got the Wii license on it. It is a Wii licensed product, so you can.
It's officially licensed?
I'm pretty sure that it is because they're promoting it pretty heavily. I'd have a hard time believing Nerf would go promote something like this without an official license.
No, I don't know about that because Nintendo is historically kind of reticent to officially license third-party peripherals. They do it on occasion, but not that often. Hmm. But you know, just because it's not officially licensed doesn't mean that it's not compatible, you know.
Right. I want to point out though that when it that there's this, some lovely screenshots of it in Nerf mode and Wii mode, and it just looks utterly ridiculous with the Wii remote sticking out of the front.
Well, maybe we'll get a review sample of this thing, because I'm kind of curious about it now. just for pure camp value, you know.
And no, you can't shoot darts while you're playing it with the Wii remote, unfortunately.
Oh, that's moddable, though.
Oh, I don't know, because the firing compartment is where the Wii remote goes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
If you took part of, half of another one and, like, mounted it on top, you'd have, like, a dual mode. So when you're playing Ghost Squad, you can zap the guy on the screen and shoot a dart at his face.
Then the better question is, why are you playing Ghost Squad?
Uh-huh.
And why aren't you playing Target Terror?
It all comes back to Target Terror.
I've got to keep bringing that up, man. It just makes me smile.
Oh, and the last thread actually is a thread that came out of a discussion of the Okami coming to Wii. Started by Evan Birchfield, who posts under the name Svevin. And I'm not going to go too much into what happened in the thread, but essentially the topic of conversation is what makes Zelda games Zelda. And it essentially devolved into a fight of two separate fights, really. Could a game without Link in it be a Zelda game? And is Twilight Princess worthy of being a Zelda game?
What?
Okay. And the first one I can appreciate. The second one...
Being a Zelda game. I mean, is the implication that it's, like, by far the worst in the series or something?
Well, it's not a Metroid game.
Well, no. The argument that came out of that one in certain regards, and in fact, I softened my position on that argument and, in fact, started to accept it, is that the whole concept behind adventure games is that there's a lot of imagination behind them. And Twilight Princess was such a direct copy of Ocarina of Time that it almost feels like it's lacking a lot of that imagination. They didn't bother to...
Well,
no, I totally disagree with that, because Majora's Mask was a direct copy of Ocarina of Time.
But Majora's Mask had a new world, it had new mechanics.
It had a different structure, but I mean, it's just as similar in different ways as Twilight Princess is to Ocarina of Time in different ways again.
Twilight Princess even went so far as to copy the entire world layout of Ocarina of Time, and the only reason it doesn't seem that way is because everything got flipped on the Wii version. And if you're playing it on the GameCube if you're playing on the GameCube version, and I had a friend who did, he literally said that the entire world map is nearly identical.
Well, it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be the same place. It's the
Hyrule.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
that's a lame criticism.
For once,
it
it's not, you know,
because
what it actually does is it distinguishes it from a lot of the other Hyrules in the sense that it's actually, the game is set sufficiently closely to the previous, to Ocarina, that it actually would be the same place. You know, it wouldn't have been completely changed by floods or whatever else happens to Hyrule over the generation. So the point is, it's acceptable to me because it's embedded into the story of the game, what there is of it.
Yeah. And then there was an argument over whether or not it's imaginative enough to even be held to, like, Wind Waker, where people get angry because of the ocean. And there was an interesting idea that the ocean might be there, but it was, and it might be just annoying to have to sail across it, but it was such a departure from Ocarina of Time that it was more acceptable as a game world.
Yeah, I agree. I think the ocean in Wind Waker was a nice step in the right direction of creating a new land for Zelda to take place in, a new environment. And I'm not 100% pleased with the environment itself, but I think it was an admirable effort, and the hint of the original Hyrule being under the water and the glimpse of it that you get is so thrilling. And I remember in Wind Waker going down there underneath the water and seeing it, you know, the world inside the bubble, basically.
Right.
And getting to go on that path, and you kind of see things off in the distance.
Yeah.
And it just lit up my imagination. Like, absolutely. Oh my god, what if I went over there? What would be over there? And unfortunately, the problem with Wind Waker is that that glimpse is all you get.
Yes, yeah.
And it's kind of a cock tease the way that they present the original Hyrule to you in Wind Waker, because you can't actually do anything in it except the castle, which is damn cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's such a limited piece of it, you know. I was hoping that would be almost like the second quest, is that you get to, like, you know, have a real chunk of the adventure happen in the old Hyrule that's still underwater. That would have been really sweet.
Yeah. But it's empty.
It was not meant to be.
I mean, there's nothing there. It's supposed to be this barren world that doesn't have anything living in it anymore.
Well, you could have had a story conceit for a reason why it comes to life in some way.
Just like the part that you actually do play through.
Yeah, you do bring things back to life to an extent.
But I think the entire mission was to prevent that world being revived by Ganondorf. And so,
that was the story that they ultimately pursued. But I mean, they pursued stories at their own convenience. If they'd had the idea of actually playing in the submerged Hyrule, they could have adapted the story to that end.
Exactly. I mean, we know for a fact that Zelda story is written after the game is designed.
Yeah, they get
they've come out and said as much.
And that's why
that's not really a problem.
I think that's why that glance, that's all you get to glance. And in fact, I remember going out there and just running into that barrier, and it sort of feels superficial barrier. I just remember that feeling of, why can't I go over there? And after I got to that point in the story where I realized what the intentions of the antagonist in this game was, it made sense why they didn't let me go there. And
Wow, you are a real tool for the story in these games.
Yeah. I mean, what I would say, I mean...
No offense!
That bit of Wind Waker is very memorable to me, because if I had to say one thing that I think Zelda's about in various forms, it's discovery. And that's probably the greatest moment of discovery in a Zelda game, is that connection between this radically different world and the one that you knew. And suddenly...
I can't remember if it's really... If it's preempted by an explanation in the English version, because most of my memories of Wind Waker from playing through the Japanese version, but I remember being on the boat and suddenly it goes underwater and realizing there's a whole world underwater.
Yeah,
it was like a holy shit.
Exactly,
moment for me.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that doesn't often happen in Zelda games, that you have something.
Yeah, but they're so predictable.
Exactly, and that for me was, in many ways, Zelda for me is about discovery, and it's not just discovery of places it is in the sense that, you know, when you have a new item and you're mucking around with it and you find your ways to solve puzzles, that's a kind of discovery, and all the other. But that moment was a really sort of quintessential moment of discovery in a Zelda game, and it does really make me think. I would love to see, and we've had Phantom Hourglass, but I would love to see a Zelda game in the Wind Waker style that's not on the ocean, because the land beneath the ocean is so beautiful in that color scheme and the cell shading and all that, that if they actually did an entire vast Hyrule, bigger even than the one that's in Twilight Princess, but that looked like that, I think that would be fantastic.
Absolutely. Well, I just to round off this discussion and bring it back to the start, I think we can say that if you're a fan of Zelda but you kind of wish for a new setting, or you wish that the story would kind of take an unexpected departure, you should absolutely check out Okami. Have any of you guys played it?
No.
Some.
No.
I have it like in my list of PS2 games I want to get to, but I just haven't yet, and I want to so bad. But now it's
well, you might as well get the Wii version at this point. I think it comes out in April or something. Okami is a brilliant game, and other than the setting of it, it doesn't have that much originality. It's clearly, I mean, blatantly based on Zelda. But if you're familiar with that style of game, you'll fit right into it. You'll pick it up immediately. And the cool thing is, and Evan points this out in the forum thread, what's exciting about it, as opposed to a lot of the recent Zelda games, is the total surprise of playing it, because you don't know where the story's going to go. You don't know where the next location is going to be or what kind of environment it's going to be. And the game's just unpredictable, even though it's set in this familiar formula. And I think that's what led to this very interesting discussion of, what if we had a Zelda that used the familiar gameplay and the style of game and yet put it in a different environment? And that is what Wind Waker did, and I think that's why Wind Waker is so beloved. It's one reason I like it so much, is it did feel kind of like a foreign environment, and yet it was familiar at the same time. Okami is the same kind of thing, so check out Okami, okay? The game needs a lot more love. But we need to move on into reader mail. We got a ton of it last week.
Yeah.
And probably that part of that was because the forums were down for a few days. But there's some good stuff here, and we need to jump into it. So I believe Greg has the first letter.
I do indeed. The first one is from Eric, and he says, hello. I've recently started to listen to the podcast, and I thoroughly enjoy every minute of it.
Every single one, including when we talk about Lords of Thunder.
Exactly. On to my topic. I was reading one up, and they had a preview on Spore, and I thought you just talked about how previews can be iffy at best due to the massive PR machines out there. I'm pretty excited about playing it on Wii. Is anyone else excited to play this game? Also, due to the massive amount of content and the general appeal of previous Will Wright games, do you think this could be one of the first games that really appeals to both the hardcore and casual gamers, as well as the people who still only own Wii Sports? What are your thoughts?
I think Spore, it's still going to be totally hardcore game, at least initially. Definitely very early, because...
Man, I think the exact opposite. I think it's really casual. I think it's going to be too casual for the hardcore audience. Yeah. I think this is more of a Sims game than... Look at the stuff Will Wright has made in the past. He doesn't really make hardcore games.
Well, no, but the they're Sims and they're SimCity.
Yeah, but SimCity is very easy to get into, and it's still not that hardcore.
Huh. I don't know.
I don't think so, personally.
Every time I see Spore, I just see very complicated things, because just the scope of the game.
Yeah, but you're thinking about what's going on underneath it. You're thinking about how the game works underneath it.
Maybe
but
that's
if you look
it.
At the surface of it, the interface of it, it's very simple. It's designed to be extremely accessible, and I think this will be more of a casual game. And by the way, regarding the Wii version, unfortunately, the game did get a release date. I don't remember what month the release date was in. Was it like September?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, September for PC and DS and Mac, maybe. I don't remember what all the platforms were, but Wii was not mentioned. Now, we do know that the Wii version is in development, but it's not coming out day and date with the other versions. The DS version is, and we still don't know a whole lot about the DS version, but I think I read a preview or a glance at a preview on IGN that said the DS version is kind of concentrating more on the interface of developing your creature and less on maybe what you actually do with the creature. So
I
highly doubt the DS version is going to have the sort of persistent downloading creatures from other people invisibly like the other versions do. So it's kind of its own animal. But at least it's coming out at the same time. You're going to have to wait longer for Wii.
Well, one concern about that, though, what are the odds the Wii is going to have that persistent downloading of creatures the same way? Because we all know Nintendo's online strategy is, we'll get to it.
Yeah, but that's totally under the umbrella of Wii Connect 24. You don't need friend codes for that kind of feature.
Has anything used?
Because it's sort of doing everything in the background.
But has anything really used?
You don't actually directly interact with other players, you know?
I don't know. I mean, that seems like... What's Wii Connect 24 been used for in the past? Brain Age. Your scores. Good scores with friends. But that just comes in through the mailbox, right?
It's actually used for several things. But, I mean, let's be clear, Wii Connect 24 is unmined territory, that's for sure. I mean, it's been wasted. And to that extent, we don't really even know exactly what it can do. I mean, we kind of get hints here and there, but Nintendo hasn't been very upfront about what that service is meant to do.
Which is very Nintendo.
You know, your Wii is online all the time. Well, that's great, but it doesn't actually do anything unless I'm sitting there playing it. It sends me messages. That's not a feature, you know? But Wii Connect 24 can be used for sort of background downloading and uploading of content with people that you don't know. That's sort of what it does with the Mi channel and some things like that. And I think that is perfectly suited for Spore. And that's probably part of why they decided that they wanted to make a Wii version, because I think the online features will work with Wii.
Yeah, I'm just not sure how developed these tools are, and if anyone even outside Nintendo really has any idea of what to do with them, or even if inside Nintendo they have any idea what to do with them.
Well, you know, EA has shown that they will develop their own online interfaces for Wii if they have to, and they'll just circumvent Nintendo's bullshit.
I'm sure Nintendo's thrilled.
So there you go. And if they think there's enough money in it for them, and with Spore, I think there is, because like I said, I think it's very much a casual game, and I think it's perfect for the Wii audience. So I'm honestly kind of surprised that it's not going to come out at the same time, but I bet you it'll be out by Christmas.
Probably. But then again, that game's been delayed so many times. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. It's a very ambitious game, but as Steven said, it is really complicated. If you think about everything that goes into how it works, it seems hardcore, you know? But I think as presented to the player, it's actually going to be a lot simpler than that. And it'll be as complicated as you want it to be.
I should say this week at GDC, I've been invited to a special EA event with Will Wright, so they're probably going to tell us all about the game, and I'll definitely know everything I wanted to know about Spore then. So check back next week for real Woo-hoo! Spore impressions from me, or like that.
Cool. Well, ask him how the Wii version is coming along if you get a chance.
If he laughs or looks away, you know we're in trouble.
just look at his eyes. If his eyes go straight for the exit door, you know something's up.
Yeah, if there's any reference to duct tape or GameCubes or anything like that, that's a bad sign.
This is the worst. If the question is answered by a PR rep who's flanking him,
oh no,
that's the worst case scenario. Anyway, James, how about the next question?
All right. Hey, guys, this is from Tween. Hey, guys.
Ooh, that's hot.
I get through hey, guys, and you guys start laughing. I'm not going to have a repeat of the Chiron letter.
Yeah, but that was innately hilarious. It's not at all comparable.
Hey, guys, love the revamp show, particularly the addition of the European perspective.
Yeah, well, you're welcome.
I represent a continent.
Greg, you're so European.
Oh, I know, aww. I know. Oh, God. Never mind, eh?
Recently, Mitt Romney endorsed John McCain, advising...
Whoa.
Wait.
He did.
What? Okay.
This is exciting territory for Reader Mail.
Mitt Romney making a second appearance on the Radio Free Nintendo here.
Yeah, and this time, maybe even less flattering. Oh, boy. Okay, go on, James.
Oh, boy. I'm even lost now. I gotta start over.
Just start over.
Okay,
man.
Fine. This is all getting cut. Recently, Mitt Romney endorsed John McCain, advising the delegates that had previously supported Romney to now support McCain. Politics aside, this gives me a mental image of Romney as Olimar, and all of the delegates gathered around him like little Pikmin.
He does make a noise when he when Mitt Romney walks around. He does make the
and he whistles to his delegates.
I'm sure you can now visualize the act of Romney arcing his little Pikmin delegates over to McCain with the accompanying patooey sound. So now that made me wonder, any news on Pikmin 3? I know you're going to say that.
Whoa! Oh, what a segue.
Yeah, seamless.
This letter is brilliant. I know you guys are going to say that Olimar and Pikmin being in brawl is a good sign, but is there anything more definitive than that on the horizon? I also can't decide if my excitement over the possibility of further adventures outweighs my trepidation of how difficult it might be to control the Pikmin with the Wiimote, but I think it does. First off, I want to say that the Wiimote or the DS touchscreen would both be brilliant for Pikmin.
Because I'm optimistic about how they could adapt it. Very much so.
Yeah, I don't think you should I don't think you should be like waggling the Wii Remote to throw Pikmin. I think the much better choice would be to use the pointer move the cursor to where you want to throw the Pikmin, and you can be much more accurate that way.
Yes.
Than you could on the GameCube.
And you could also, you could like B to throw the Pikmin, A to use your whistle thing and tell them to go there, and move Olimar around with the nunchuck, and you've basically covered the entire control pattern.
Yeah, and it's not a complicated game in terms of control.
On the DS, you might have to go a little bit Phantom Hourglass-like with the touchpad, or using a combination of the D-pad DS and the touchscreen.
Just the low-res kind of nature of DS, I wonder how it could handle it.
It would have to be very scaled down.
Yeah, that would be tricky.
Mm,
well, you can't scale it down too much, because if things are too small on the DS screen, the resolution just can't.
I just mean scale down
so many.
Scale down the scope of the Pikmin. World and things.
You mean like scale down the number of Pikmin?
Make the world more simple.
To what extent then you start to lose the quality, the essence of Pikmin is the question.
Right.
Isn't it? Well, you know,
right.
If you're not managing,
let's not forget that Pikmin started as the Mario 100 Mario's demo. And in other words, Pikmin started as a tech demo of how many characters you could put on the screen at the same time.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. I think Geometry Wars shows that the DS has problems with that. So
yeah, that's just 2D shapes too.
I think it's more. I think it's better suited for Wii. But with the DS, in terms of control, it shouldn't be a problem. You could use the stylus, as you said in Phantom Hourglass, to kind of move Olimar, and that would be like your cursor. And that would be where the Pikmin are thrown, and then you just kind of hit the, like the L trigger or whatever.
Why not use the DS as a controller for the Wii game?
Because that would reek very badly of Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles and the $500 needed to play it with four people.
That game was awesome, okay?
Crystal Chronicles. If you had the parts, that was awesome. If you didn't,
the thing is, I had the parts, and it was awesome.
You wouldn't need cables, so there is.
You would need cables here.
Yeah.
So everybody has a DS. Everybody has a Wii. So what's the problem there?
I'm kind of surprised that hasn't happened yet. I really am.
I think Crystal Chronicles is way overrated. I think it's one of those situations where because it took such an effort to get people together to play it, that they tended to kind of overrate.
You say there was an inflated feeling of
accomplishment. I totally disagree on that, and I can say that because. Like Four Swords, which you guys love, I don't like it at all.
Ooh,
so
interesting.
That's not a valid argument, because if that was the case, every GBA GC connectivity game would have a similar argument.
Maybe that's just proof that you have bad taste.
I think we've already discussed.
I played quite a bit of three-player Crystal Chronicles. I had at the time I was living with two roommates, and we played it quite a bit. And we just kind of got fed up with it. It's like replaying the same levels over and over, and they just get harder, and they get harder in an abusive way, really. and the game sort of goes nowhere. Like there's no point to it. Like I'm not even sure you can beat it. Like maybe you can.
I agree with you on that point, and the fact you just kind of do it over and over again.
I think the progression is really broken in that game. Although the basic idea of like cooperating and competing at the same time obviously works. But there's some mechanics involved with the bucket and everything that are sort of very annoying, and it ends up, I don't know, the stuff with the reason that they required you to use the GBA, that you get like the secret information on your screen, is really lame and not worth it. And
yes and no.
I think the game has a lot of problems, you know. I think the Wii version, if it ever comes out, will be a lot better.
Here's my thinking behind it. I wrote this in Impressions for the site way back when. But it just kind of got the feeling that everybody has their own screen, which means everybody has their own menu systems, and everybody has their own list of items that they're carrying. I really kind of like the fact that when we went to a town, we needed to build new armor and craft materials and stuff, that we all had to talk to each other, like, hey, what do you have? Do you have the copper, or do you have this cloth that I need? Oh, you do? Okay, let's trade. So we were basically communicating, talking to each other as if we were there in the town talking to each other, looking to get these items.
So I agree with that. This is another level of role playing.
It's kind of an added
dimension. You're playing the role of your character, which is the point of a role playing game.
That sounds kind of
interesting. Yeah, I agree. But the method of trading items amongst each other is one person has to deal with some poorly designed menus to drop the item, and another person has to go over and pick it up.
Yeah.
And then go talk to the person, and while he's talking to the non-player character who deals with item creation or whatever, the other people are sitting there doing nothing and watching. And so a fair amount of the game, especially when you're in the town, is spent watching someone else play an RPG. So it's not all glorified like the way you're putting it. There are some problems with the interface and everything like that.
But there are some
problems. The central idea is great.
Yeah.
It needs to have a different interface.
So,
that's what I think.
Pikmin.
Yeah, I was going to say, as regards the prospects for Pikmin 3, there is some cause. I mean, I know there's a kind of widespread sentiment that it is coming, and there is some sort of optimism because a lot of people have kind of been dimly predicting that Mario Kart would fall further and further back into the back end of this year's release schedule and whatnot. But it's looking good to come out, this half of the year, for sure.
Yeah.
And that means there's going to be some gaps that we really don't know. Wii Fit's going to be out by May, by all accounts. Mario Kart, obviously, probably similar to the time frame. And then there's just this golf.
We really don't know what Nintendo's got lined up, except for Wii Fit in their new fiscal year.
Indeed.
Well, Microsoft is sort of in the same boat.
So
I think it is interesting that it's the first year in a while that we don't know a priori what is the big holiday game this year.
Yeah, and there's
everything came out last year.
Yeah, and there's a possibility that Nintendo
be a sort of.
Go ahead.
It's not going to be a big holiday game, really, realistically, but it could be complementary in a way that Battalion Wars was, or something, but hopefully to a greater extent than that was, getting buried next to Halo or whatever the hell happened to it in the end.
Worst launch decision ever.
Got buried next to Zack and Wiki, bitch.
Oh, did he get pushed back? What happened to it? I forget. What? I mean, it's still not out here, or it just came out, or something.
Really?
It's ridiculous. Obviously, well, Nintendo of Europe was actually waiting for Carl's review, and then they stopped waiting.
Speaking of.
Bird. The point is, I think it's going to happen. It has to happen. The control could easily be adapted well if they do it right. And is a you look at that gap, and maybe Star Fox is going to come into play at some point. I don't know. Or there's been plenty of talk of returning franchises filling some of that gap this year, and Pikmin could be one of them.
Well, on the topic of Star Fox, if you read our post-mortem interview on Star Fox Command. Command.
Yes, the DS.
I always forget the subtitle.
Is
Command.
Well, it changed titles like four times. One, yeah. So I mean.
I do like the game, but I just cannot remember the subtitle. It's just such a random.
You just have to think of the sort of when you're drawing your ships around. That's kind of like commanding. So just
and I like that part of the game, actually. But if you read our post-mortem with Dylan Cuthbert, who was he's one of the head guys at Q Games, which is the company that developed that game, and he was he actually worked on the original Star Fox and Star Fox 2. If you read our interview with him, and not many people did, so I recommend that you go search for it. It's very interesting. He lays down very blatant hints. Excuse me, I can't talk now. He lays out some very blatant hints that they are probably working on another Star Fox game, and that was like 2 years.
2006.
Ago,
yeah, probably would have been the end of August or something. 2006.
Right. So. I think they have been working on something for Star Fox for quite some time, and it would not surprise me at all if it was for Wii.
I think
Star Fox is another strong possibility, but just getting back to Pikmin 3, I agree with Greg. It is a game that Nintendo could very well basically surprise us with short notice, and honestly, I was surprised when they announced Pikmin 2, but that game sold over 1 million copies in Japan. It was actually like a certified success.
Really? I was always under the impression that Melee was the only GameCube game that managed to breach 1 million in Japan alone.
Oh no, there were several. I think Sunshine sold over a million.
Yeah, maybe this was a bit end. I don't know.
The original Pikmin easily sold over 1 million, and honestly, I think Pikmin 2 did as well. It sold surprisingly well.
Pikmin 2 was really well advertised in Japan, though. I mean, it had that song that was with all the commercials, and the song itself became a certified hit.
I know Uta, yes, the strawberry song.
Yes, which has somehow.
By the way, that's in the latest Brawl radio trivia. If you want to listen,
quite possibly the best podcast in history.
Yes.
We'll get to that later. But Pikmin and Pikmin 2 were actually successful,
I think
Pikmin 3 is inevitable.
Well, I'm going to say right now, I honestly don't think it's coming in the next few years, because I honestly believe that Pikmin 2 flopped so bad outside Japan, and Nintendo may well be saying our DS is Japan-centric, but our Wii is going to be more non-region-centric. Because you think about it, the majority of the Wiis are in the U.S., and the game didn't do very well here. I honestly think that they might not make a Pikmin 3 anytime soon.
They will.
I believe
that. Maybe there'll be Excite Truck 2 instead.
Maybe.
Buy it.
Yeah, I probably
we need to move on to the next letter. And this one is from Ryan, and it says, I was listening to your episode entitled Perverted Messiah, and I heard you talking about the hassle. I love that title. And I heard you talking about the hassle that is Wii Shop Channel. That was John Lindemann primarily discussing the Wii Shop Channel's many flaws.
Oh, thousand.
When you started talking about the status bar and the coins, I remembered something about it. So here's what the coins really mean. Quote from us.wii.com. This is from Awada Asks. Someone says, also, this is quote, also, when Mario gets one coin during download, that download is 1% complete, and when he gets all 100, the download is complete. However, the number of coins may get shortened depending on the amount of data and the downloading speed. And that definitely fits with my experience with the Virtual Console, because I've downloaded some NES games, and my connection is very fast, and I've downloaded some NES games that Mario definitely collected less than 100
coins,
so I was pretty sure that he kind of skips some if it's going fast enough. But otherwise, it's basically 1%. And I think the bricks are kind of 20... Actually, maybe they're more like 33%, 66%, and 100%, or something like that.
Well, you know, this came up because when I downloaded Lords of Thunder this week...
Lords of Thunder!
I had somebody in the room with me. And he got to that third brick, and it just started going. And eventually, they said something along
the... Bing, 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 bing.
They said something along the lines of, mute it, or I'm leaving the room.
It's incessant, really.
You know, why can't they just have a progress status bar? Yeah. You can have that along with Mario getting coins. You can have that with the bricks. But, you know, I didn't even know that.
Because,
so how is the majority of everybody going to know that?
Because Nintendo is a horribly incomprehensible company.
I think it's totally awesome that they put Mario into the shop channel.
I'm not saying it's not. I am just saying if I'm downloading something, I need a percentage.
They essentially disposed of 10 years of internet history.
I don't know. If you spend a lot of time copying channels to your SD card, that process can be very long, as John mentioned last week, and there is no status indication whatsoever for that.
That's
so it just goes diddy, and you just sit there and wait.
Did no one in Nintendo, for
an indeterminate amount of time.
Had no one in Nintendo ever used a graphical operating system or an internet browser?
Apparently.
They do all their stuff via the command line? I mean, what's wrong with this company?
Maybe they're still on 56K over there. Maybe they're just used to those.
Nobody has.
And they think the Wii is like 100 times faster.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, Wendy, I think the next letter is right up your alley.
Well, yes and no, but I'll read it anyway. So okay. Patchkid15, he writes it, recently, while browsing the internet, I discovered a few websites that offer to give you game testing jobs, but for a price. I also found other sites that offered the ability to download games from the internet. Do you believe these websites to be scams or trustworthy?
Joke thread?
Yeah.
No. Like, he also sent some URLs, and I'm not going to, you know, give them free advertising and read them on the air. But two of them, it says, like, game testing sites. One of them, I went, it's completely down. And the second one says, hey, I'll give you, you know, game testing leads if you give me, you know, $30 a month. And, it's totally a scam. Because if you want a game testing job to completely entry level, anybody, you know, out of high school can get a game testing job. And in fact, it's a really popular summer job. And game publishers want testers because they have a lot, it just works out that during the summer they're testing their games they're going to have out for the holiday period. So there's really no need to have somebody do the quote unquote groundwork for you, because all you have to do is literally, and this is how I got my game testing job, go to a publisher's website, see if they're hiring. If they are, put in a resume. More often than not, they'll call you back, say, hey, you want to work here? That's it. Nothing to it. It's
when,
really
do you
easy.
Want to say who you tested for?
I'll pass for now.
Okay.
And then
but you held this job for a while. I mean, you were a professional game tester, right?
Yeah, two and a half years.
It was awesome. I remember seeing you at E3 wearing someone else's badge.
Yeah, and I had to do like a PR video for them, and I feel like,
did you really?
Yeah, it was.
Is this on the internet?
It was for EB Games, like, you know, the looping video they do in the EB Games.
Oh, God. You'll
be able to find it anywhere.
This has to be on the internet.
I hope it is. I want to see myself, because I
have to see this.
but anyways, yeah, so that's that. And this other game site that, you know, promises, you know, free unlimited game downloads, is just a BitTorrent shell, basically.
Nice.
And they have this big old disclaimer at the bottom where they say, well, some games you can download for free, but everything else, oh, don't download it. We're not responsible if you do, because you're just doing the peer-to-peer thing.
Yeah. Well, that's the crux of BitTorrent, though, is that no one's really responsible for it.
Yeah, I know, isn't it great?
That's why it works, you know? Yeah. Anyway, kids, don't steal games. You know, just... I don't know what to say. Like, pray that Virtual Console will get better.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah, Nintendo, you know, you're not helping exactly. The fact that people are downloading free games all over the place. You want
to? Well, I mean, it's better than what they used to do. But,
yeah,
but
well.
You think paying $5 for Urban Champion is any better?
No. What they're no paying $8 for Phantasy Star 2 is a good legal alternative to piracy, and the creators of the game. Presumably, or at least the corporate creators of the game, will get some money for it.
Yeah.
So, I think that's a fine way.
I'm totally up with that. Just, you know, it's... Yeah. I just, you know, with the TV starting to move all their TV shows online for free, video games might have to start worrying about getting their entertainment time taken away from them. Because if I can get free entertainment online, why should I spend more time playing video games?
Yeah.
Think about that.
Ooh.
I'll notice.
Okay.
On
you're on notice.
Video games, you're on notice.
All right, Greg.
Yes,
can
I
you read
have
the
next
letter,
one
please.
It's from Ryan. I'm sure you're aware of Namco Bandai's absurd suggestion that the Wii is responsible for failing arcades in Japan. I think it's been pretty obvious that arcades have been dying out long before the Wii came along. I'm actually writing about something that concerns me a bit more. I've been seeing a lot of anti-Wii sentiment in response to Namco Bandai's claims. I know there's always going to be inane fanboys, but I genuinely believe there's a strong anti-Wii sentiment among hardcore gamers and journalists alike. I think gaming would go down a far darker road if these people had their way. Hardcore gamers expect so much from games nowadays. Downloadable content, high-res graphics, high production values, massively multiplayer online experiences, all these things cost money. Not everybody can afford to pump money into development the way Microsoft does. If there was no Wii, there'd be no place for lower budget games, because the hardcore who live by the motto, if it ain't AAA, I don't play, would be the only ones buying games. Prices of games and consoles would continue to go up, and we'd see less people buying into this hobby. That would be far worse for the industry than just some shovelware. What do you guys think?
Well, I would like to say...
That's a good
I think
argument.
It's good that we have a balance.
Balance as in, you know, a handful of AAA games and a 30 handfuls of shovelware?
Yeah. Well, do you think that shovelware as a problem, as a sort of negative phenomenon, is exaggerated by the enthusiast press because they have to deal with it?
No. I'll tell you why. Because you think about most of the time, most game purchases, if not most in a significant portion of game purchases, people just walk into a store, look at the box and say, hey, I want to buy this. I mean, we can't argue against that. That's what happens most of the time.
How much shovelware has box art that's not like Pool Party?
Well, see, but that's the thing. People don't know any better. If they see a game that has like this one feature, it's something that looks like it's something they want to play, chances are they just might just buy it, especially if it's cheap. But then what happens is all these low quality, I won't say flat out bad, but all the games that kind of are below a quality level that we would consider tolerable, people keep buying these games, and eventually the problem's going to be, well, all the people that are buying these games will think, well, then why are the rest of the games must be this bad if so many of them are?
Mm. Wendy, let me interrupt here, because I think what Ryan's letter is about is basically that so-called hardcore gamers, or at least people who don't like the Wii, feel that all Wii games are what you just described, even the good ones, even Twilight Princess or whatever. They feel like Wii games in general are basically taking away from the quality, or taking attention away from the AAA games on other systems. Because even the best Wii games, they consider to be practically shovelware compared to what they get on the other systems.
Yeah, like,
and
obviously
that's a false premise.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand what you see, because
this question is not about shovelware. It's that the perception that people who are so-called fanboys of other systems perceive basically all Wii software as shovelware, because it's just not up to their standards of having, you know, always aware live play and high-res graphics, etc.
I mean, I totally understand what the question is, and you know, obviously, we would like to have all that stuff in our Wii games, too. I mean, even basic online functionality that works.
Oh. You know,
some of our games would be good for Wii, but Nintendo's obviously gone a completely different route. And that's the thing, though. It's different. It's not better or worse in the same ways that, you know, Xbox Live, like Xbox over Xbox 360, that's better than it was before, but it's still the same. The Wii is different, and it's kind of better and worse in its own ways. But you know, think of a game like Wii Sports. I mean, who doesn't like Wii Sports? If you don't like Wii Sports, then you're probably lying. Because
I think there are people who don't like it, but they haven't played it in the right context.
Exactly. I mean, but they just look at it and say, "Well, I can't. You know, I can't even run the bases. What fun is that?" But that's not the point.
Well, the real issue in this email, I think, is that people who are kind of attached to the so-called next-gen consoles are afraid that the success of the Wii will draw development talent and money away from AAA games on their systems into less than AAA games on the Wii.
Well, you know,
and so they see the Wii as a threat, even though it's something different. Yeah. It's technically not competitive. I mean, let's be realistic. It is competitive. It's competitive for people's dollars, and that means it's compatible for development studios and publishers' attention.
Well, you know,
and that's why they perceive it as a threat, and that's legitimate.
This is a concern that I had at some point, even being, you know, working on a Nintendo site, for God's sakes, but that developers are going to see that they can make some easy games on Wii, and they can get a fair amount of money just from doing minimum effort, and would shy away from making triple A titles. And I think you can kind of see that on the Wii a little bit. How many AAA titles have come out of the third party for the Wii? You could probably
count. That's actually within the platform, though, isn't it? I mean, in terms of the supposed hardcore gamers on the outside, that really shouldn't be such an immediate threat to them, because they don't care whether it crowds out AAA titles on the Wii. They're worried about it crowding out AAA titles in the industry.
But I think
so
it could,
kind of a separate
issue. I think it could
tell
get
you what,
to that, though.
Like, Microsoft and Sony fanboys aren't worried about the AAA titles on Wii because those are coming from Nintendo, and Nintendo wouldn't make games for those other platforms in the first place. I think what they are worried about is mainstream publishers like Konami publishing games like Target Terror.
Exactly.
We're all worried about that.
Really, I think this is a serious issue, because Target Terror is clearly a game that Konami paid minimal money to publish from the arcade. They're putting minimal effort into porting it to the Wii, and that game could possibly sell fine.
Okay,
you know,
well, no, Johnny.
Based on the box art or whatever,
yes,
that may sell fine. And what they're worried about is not that that game will earn money, but that the success of the sales of that game will shift Konami's strategy away from developing things like MGS4.
No, but Johnny, you just kind of said it yourself. They paid minimum money for it. They're probably putting minimum resources into it, and yet they make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So that's obviously they're basically making money from nothing.
Right.
And the big AAA titles always define, like, they're the big, I would not necessarily money makers, but they're definitely the thing that can just totally elevate a game or a publisher or a franchise to the next level. Like, you know, Call of Duty. I mean, look at Call of Duty 4. That game was probably ridiculously expensive to develop. But they're just going to make so much return on investment on that anyway.
But, Steven, that is not going to stop Activision from publishing a shitty Call of Duty 5 from a different developer that will still sell well based on the strength of the franchise created by Call of Duty 1, 2, and 3.
But I would...
Okay, yeah, it's not. But they're going to make so much money off of that, they can afford to.
Yeah. I would never call
Activision.
They can
afford to take the money they make off of that and apply it to a new game.
To what extent is making money off these shovelware-type games mutually exclusive with, you know, the prestige and ultimately the potential for massive profits from a AAA titles? Because they're so low risk, low sort of a modest reward or good, it really isn't an anchor on what they can do. I mean, it may actually enable them to do more. In terms of it might actually...
It could,
let's say they take all their...
But corporations are addicted to money from nothing. They're addicted to that. And corporations are always concerned about increasing profits quarter to quarter. And if you can't increase revenue, that means cutting costs. Mm. And cutting costs means taking money off of big name projects. This is a legitimate concern.
It's a legitimate concern. There's also a question of diversification in the sense that, you know, companies will always want to diversify their revenue stream because the Wii bubble, the shovelware bubble could burst and just, you know, cease to be a viable, and you need to have tended to those other gardens, as it were, to produce that, you know, AAA fruit and sell volume that way. So I think it's a legitimate concern. I don't think it's necessarily that pressing. But in terms of what Ryan was, but Ryan mentions the fact that he thinks that there's a bias within the media. That it's not just gamers, you know, these sort of techno-supremacist gamers that are terribly concerned about gaming sort of getting drawn back into some sort of dark age, but also that the press is biased against. And that's why I mentioned about, does the press kind of, to some extent, embellish the problem of shovelware? Because is it because they have to deal with it and they don't like dealing with it? So that you could, that Ryan perceives a disconnect between, you know, how, what the phenomenon is and you know, how these press outlets are actually portraying it, and then it might appear that they are in fact anti-Wii when perhaps they're not.
Well, I could say anybody would feel bitter after playing Miami Nights, but I think I think there is a certain amount.
This is it in a nutshell. You know, I mean, if you're someone like myself, the shovelware problem is kind of somewhat irksome, but I'm never going to play these games. So, yeah, purely from my own point of view, I could care less. I mean, in terms of what it, then you take the broader view, and it's like, is it preventing better games from coming out? Is it, that's fine, but that's not a luxury. That choice that I make is not a luxury that the media outlets have. They have to cover this stuff to a certain extent. And well, does it then become more of a problem?
We have to acknowledge it. We don't have to cover it.
Yeah.
That might be the problem.
I think it's a good time to move on. So James has the last question of the day.
I did have one more comment I wanted to make.
Okay,
There is one...
You have the last word, O'Reilly.
There's one major publisher this could really affect. And that's Capcom, because despite what we think of Capcom, it's actually a fairly small company. And if they get into making these ports and things like we've seen them doing, and think of it, Resident Evil 4 was a port. They're porting Okami.
Okami is a really low budget.
Yeah, it is.
Port, like short development, outside development.
Resident Evil Umbrella Chronicles wasn't a port, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a big AAA title either. Zack and Wiki was under their development, but they didn't put a lot of money behind it. You can kind of see that in it. And you look at what they're doing on the Game Boy... my God, I can't believe I said that. Nintendo DS. They're making Mega Man Star Force...
The Game Boy DS.
They're making Mega Man Star Force, which is just a 3D version of the Mega Man NT series. Capcom really runs the risk of being brought into this and cutting off things like Lost Planet they made, which now they're just porting to the PS3 and... doing a really sloppy job of it. And I think if any company will be affected, it's Capcom. So that should be a company, if you're really concerned about this, you should keep an eye on what they're doing. Because I think...
I don't know. I think Capcom is well known as being an opportunistic publisher.
Yeah, but they,
and sequel happy, port happy,
etc. They could get worse. And also, the concern... the comment about the arcades going down for a long time, not in Japan. In Japan, arcades had held their popularity, so the decrease in arcade revenue in Japan is actually noteworthy.
Yeah.
So maybe that is the Wii's fault, except the Wii is not even... It's successful in Japan, but it's not like, oh my god, every single person owns a Wii. Mm. That title goes to the DS.
Yeah.
Just a bit. But it does sort of do the same thing that keeps arcades popular in Japan, which was social gaming. Gaming with someone else face-to-face in that sort of environment.
Kind of that's active, participatory kind of element to it.
And that is the same thing that drives the Wii in a lot of regards. So it could have some effect on the arcade downturn in Japan, but I wouldn't attribute it to it. Although I'm sure Nintendo would love to be able to make that claim.
Okay, well, let's move on.
Okay, so this is from Kraken613. Hey, I'm new to the boards, but I've listened to every podcast and I love the site. I'm wondering, for people who have played Brawl, is the classic controller any good? I don't have any Wavebirds anymore, and I can't find them to buy. I just have the old wired ones.
Well, they lost the mold.
Well, you're SOL, buddy. No, just kidding. No, but I actually I have gotten a pretty good amount of time with the Classic controller, both when I played it at events and also here at home when I've had some, you know, all those people over. Played Smash Brothers Revolver, 12 hours. That was awesome. Anyways, it's fine. It's totally
You're bragging,
fine.
You know.
Am I? Oh. How dare you accuse me? Why would I brag about playing Super Smash Brothers Brawl for 12 hours straight with like 20 people and we all had an awesome time? It was the greatest thing ever. Why would I brag about that?
I don't know.
Curious. you know, I'm okay, not getting this game till like September, right? Just
if you're lucky.
Hey, Greg, I want you to realize our first reaction to that is we all laughed.
Yeah, I know.
Go ahead and rub it
feel
in.
Feel sorry
Steve.
For you.
You're assuming I'm not completely made out of hate, are you?
I did lament.
Greg, I think it's time to get a. I think it's time to get a North American.
Yeah, but the thing is, though. But seriously, now, what we've seen is that basically you can't really play random matches with an imported console. Is that right?
That's kind of what it looks like so far.
Yeah,
I don't
see,
know
that's
if it has
kind
to
of a
just
big
the fact
bloody
that the distance is so great.
Yeah,
because I had let's see, I think it was that guy from the forums who lives in Florida. I did play a couple matches against him, but the connection was very bad. It was like 0 out of 4, or 1 out of 4, or however they rate it, and it was slow and laggy. It was actually, even despite that, it was quite playable, but it wasn't what I would call the optimal Brawl experience. And, you know, Japan's even further away than Florida is from California, so that's probably why I can't hook up with anybody randomly in Japan. They just won't let me connect to anybody with a crappy connection strength that was that far away.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, luckily,
yeah, I don't know.
Luckily, I could actually lay my hands on a certain number of friend codes at this point working for the site, which, you know, would probably be rather more difficult.
Sure.
So I could hopefully find some.
If you listen to our podcast, if you go to our website, you can get friend codes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the side benefits. Anyway, back to the question, Classic controller.
Yeah, the Classic controller, if you don't have a GameCube controller, it's going to work just fine, particularly because you can customize every single button on it to do whatever you want.
I love that.
That's. I mean, if you couldn't do that, it might be iffy, but just the fact that you can kind of tweak where you want, you know, the A attacks and the B attacks to be, or the jump buttons, then it'll be totally fine. Because TYP, when he came over, he brought his Classic controller, and he tried playing it a little bit, and it's laid out in the GameCube way, in which A, which is off to the right on the Classic controller, kind of like the SNES pad, is attack, but he kind of thought that, well, that's kind of where Y is supposed to be, like the GameCube controller. Mm. So every time he tried to jump, he actually hit the attack button, which was really confusing him. So he just, you know, he just switched it out, and he was fine. So, you know, no problem. And, you know, even like the little Z buttons, the little stupid little Z buttons on the inside of the top of the controller.
Those actually do something?
Those are grab.
Really?
That would be like the regular Z button on the GameCube controller.
See, I think those are more comfortable to reach than the Z button on a WaveBird.
I don't think anything.
Yeah, but I'm so used to the WaveBird Z that.
Yeah, the thing with the WaveBird Z,
I never actually use Z on.
It's
the WaveBird.
Kind of curious.
With Smash, I just use the, for grabbing, I just
Shield A.
What is the? Yeah, is it like forward? What is the
Shield and A button?
Shield and A. That's what I do. Yeah.
And you can still do that in Brawl, and even if you wanted to, you can move grab to the L button on the game controller. GameCube controllers are totally customizable.
Or the L button on the Classic controller.
Yeah, or in the Classic. Yeah, exactly. That's my point. So,
yeah. You don't even need Z.
How many buttons?
Z1 or Z2.
A, B, jump, grab, shield. You only need five buttons. And there are definitely five buttons that are in comfortable reach of the Classic controller. Yeah.
Cool.
So don't worry about if you don't have a GameCube controller. A Classic controller, it'll work just fine. You'll get into it right away. And if I had to, I wouldn't mind using the Classic controller either. But since I'm so used to Brawl or Melee, I just have to use the GameCube controller.
Chill, yeah.
Cool. Alright, this show has gone long, and we need to end it. So, tons of great reader mail. We love it. Please keep sending. The address is RFN. That's Radio Free Nintendo at NintendoWorldReport.com. Also, I'd like to make a special appeal this week. Make this Tell a Friend Week, okay? Tell a friend about Radio Free Nintendo. I know you know people who give a shit about this stuff. I know you do. Come on. Think about it. You know. You do. So, please, give us some word of mouth here, you know? We want to be heard by everyone. We want to share the love. Because we have a lot of love to give, don't we?
2 hours and 10 minutes worth.
Positively overflowing with it.
Very, very lovely crowd here. So yeah, we want to spread it around, and so please take this week as a special assignment to spread the love of RFN to your friends. And that's your assignment.
And radio trivia too.
Yes.
And radio trivia, that's for God's sake, James Charlton, our Japan correspondent by way of the UK, sent us an email and said, "Wow, I listened to radio trivia for the first time ever this week. I never knew how awesome it was. Why don't you guys talk about it more on your other podcast
that is
listened by more people?" And I felt really guilty because I realized that last week we actually had TYP on the show, the host of Radio Trivia, and we didn't even mention it. We didn't even give like a plug, a standard plug. So let's put this out there right now. If you listen to this show, you will enjoy Radio Trivia. It's
the
other
podcast
of Nintendo World Report.
You will love Radio Trivia.
You'll love it. Even if you don't even like game music that much, which is kind of where I fall in, there's so much game discussion on the show. Because every game that they play music from, there's like kind of a discussion period afterwards where you just blob about it. You know, you just kind of rant. And that's fun to listen to. So it's not that different from this show, except you have much better background music.
Yes. You have background music in general.
Yeah.
Hey, and this last radio trivia, it's all Super Smash Brothers Brawl music.
Oh, it's
awesome. How could you turn that down and not download that and listen to it?
It's a great way to get yourself started.
Seriously.
Awesome.
It is a great episode.
Having been on the Radio Trivia podcast, I can say that the discussion is much more focused, so you'll actually learn a lot more than listening to us ramble on.
Oh,
it is.
That's right.
It is more focused.
I heartily agree with that statement.
How many pieces of silver? How many did it take? Good God.
Whoa.
Honestly. Caesar in a pool of blood.
So, anyway,
over here.
If you check out the Smash Brothers Brawl episode of that show, you will hear our esteemed guest of this very podcast, Stephen Windy Man Rodriguez.
That's right.
That's right. And also, of course, we thank our podcast editor and staff, James
Thank
Jones.
You.
And Greg, Brian Braddock, Leahy.
I like alliteration names.
Sister what? Of the hotness, Psylocke.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
She will kill you with her psychic sword.
And good at Guitar Hero as well, apparently.
Is she?
Well,
Psylocke.
You know, can be.
Did she get a million points?
You could get any points you want. It's Psylocke, man. Got
oh, you totally!
Whoa!
I hope you got that joke.
He knows more about it than we do. So, and I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and we thank you for sticking with us for another lengthy episode of Radio Free Nintendo. And we'll see you next week, or else we'll talk at you next week. So, bye for now. Ta-ta.
Oh, God.
Oh, that lance through the heart.